Dear brothers and sisters in God, coal and charcoal are the cheapest, the most common, and the least sublime of all substances. But have we ever considered that when they are placed under proper conditions, the carbon transforms itself into the most precious gem? The scientists tell us that this form of carbon undergoes intense pressure and heat 75 miles before the Earth's surface, and gradually, through eons and eons, that carbon is transformed into a diamond. It crystallizes and ultimately it comes to the surface of the earth. But even at that time, at the best, it is a rough diamond and it needs a lot of rubbing, cutting and polishing to be transformed into a full-fledged diamond reflecting light at its best. So when we think of this analogy in the spiritual field, we find that our human body is also a rough diamond. It passes through the intense heat, trials and tribulations of the 8.4 million species of life. It undergoes sufferings and sorrows of the lower species of life. It develops from the lowest species of life gradually towards the roof and crown of creation, and it is after eons and eons that it ultimately achieves the goal of the human life, which is known to be the roof and crown of creation. And then, when it assumes the human life, it is full of impurities, and first it does not realize its own value, and it is left only to a master jeweler's expert eye to recognize its true value. And then he, under his own expert guidance, cuts it and polishes it, and ultimately it is able to achieve its primary objective in life, which is self-knowledge and God-realization. Let us go into the history of the creation and how ultimately we achieve the human life. It is said that in the beginning God was all alone. He was an ocean of all consciousness. He then thought of becoming many from one. There was a vibration and he assumed two forms. One, light of God, and the other, harmony of harmonies, or music of the spheres, or celestial music, or unstruck melody, as it is called. Both these divine gifts of light of God and celestial music are known as the holy word, about which it has come in the Bible. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And this creative force of the Holy Word, which has been described in all the scriptures of the world in their own terminologies, the Vedas call it Nath, the Upanishads call it Udgit, the Zoroastrians call it Srosha, the Sikh scriptures call it Shabd, Vani, or Naam. The Muslims call it Kalma, the Sufis call it Bhangi Asmani or Nadaya Sarmati. Similarly, the old Greeks call it Logos, and the old Chinese saint call it Tao. It is called as the voice of silence by the Theosophical Society friends. So the same creative power is described in various scriptures by various names. And then this creative power of the Holy Word is brought first to inner planes into existence, and then other universes came into being. Then man was formed, and the remaining of the 8.4 million species of life came into existence. And since the dawn of times, we have been going from one species to another. And so many yugas have passed according to the old Indian calendars, and it is now that we have attained this human body, which is the roof and crown of creation. It is said in the Holy Bible that God made man after his own image. Similarly, Maulana Rum, the great Persian Sufi mystic, has said, Badas Khuda Buzurg Toi Kissa Mukhsar, that to sum up the story of creation, man occupies a status next to God. And the Muslim call it Ashraful Makhlukat. The old Hindu scriptures call it Nar Narayani Dei, and it is known to be the Sardar Juni. So man is the highest of all creation. It is the roof and crown of all creation. And this status has been given to man because it is only in a human life that we get an opportunity to bring about the union of our soul with God. In no other species of life can we attain this ultimate goal. And it is said in the scriptures that when man was created, even the angels were asked to bow down to man. And that is because even if the angels have to attain ultimate communion of the soul with the Creator, they have also to come in the human body. And it is only in the human body that we can attain the ultimate goal of the human life, which is self-knowledge and God-realization. So It is only the masters who tell us that we have already spent and wasted many of the best which have been allotted to us in life, and they guide us to make use of the remainder of our life in the attainment of the be-all and end-all of the human life, which is knowing ourselves and realizing God. Just as it is only the eyes of a perfect jeweler, of a master jeweler, which can recognize the rough gem, and then he alone can polish it and cut it so as to evolve the greatest possible brilliance out of a diamond. In like manner, it is our living master who teaches us the art of ethical life. He teaches us the art of dying while living, and he ultimately prunes our eccentricities, our failings, our weaknesses, and he purifies us so can we can attain the ultimate goal of union our soul with the Creator. So about this human body, everybody has said that this man body is the real temple of God. It has been said that God does not reside in temples made with stones by human hands. He resides in the temple which he has made himself, and that is the human body. In this connection, novelist of Germany has said, there is only one temple in the universe, and that is the human body. And when we come to the feet of a living master, they explain to us that we should make the best of the remaining portion of our life. They tell us that once we slip from the top rung of the ladder, who knows when we may regain our footing and the opportunity of this human birth is lost. So we should realize the value of the human birth. And in this connection, I'm reminded of a small story. A man had a huge grove of trees, and he started selling the various trees as ordinary wood, firewood, to the customers. When he has sold almost 90 to 95% of his grove, an expert of wood came there. He looked at the wood and he told him, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm selling this as a firewood." He said that the trees in the grove are not ordinary trees. They are the sandalwood trees, and you must realize their value. So that the result was that when he offered those trees to the buyers, he was able to get much more for the remainder portion of the grove than he had achieved for the rest of the grove. So we also do not realize the true value of our life, and it is only when a living master tells us the greatness of the value of the human life that we start making the most of it. In this connection, by Nandlal Goya, the great Persian poet who was a lover and a devotee of the 10th Guru, Vinsingh Ji Maharaj, has said, "It is only the jeweler's eye that at a glance can tell the value of a gem." So we have to make the most of the remaining portion of our life. It is said in the scriptures that when a man is born, he is given a capital of a certain number of breaths, and he gives up his human body, his human vesture, when that capital is finished. So we see that we do not realize the true purpose of our life. If we look at the list of priorities of our life, we find that either man knowledge and God realization does not find a list of our priorities, or if it occupies a place in that list, it is at one of the lowest listed therein. In this connection, I am reminded of an incident from our beloved master Sant Kripal Singh Ji's life. When he passed in matriculation examination, which is equivalent to the high school here in this place, he had a big question before him. And that question was that what his aim in life should be. He pondered over the whole question for more than a week and ultimately came to the decision, God first and world next. And he never looked back. The result was that he was not able only to realize himself and realize God, but he met thousands and thousands of people in having that realization. So we have also to devise our priorities in life. Now what happens is that we do not realize the importance of the human life. I remember that when I was a little child, I used to go to a shop to get trees worth a couple of pennies, and the shopkeeper would give me the trees, which was in return for the money which I paid, and then give me a little over and above that amount, and I was very happy about that additional portion. We used to call it a junga. Here also in the West I find that we pay for the 12 breads and we get 13 instead. So in the spirituality also, we don't want to work for spirituality, but if we can get it into the bargain along with our worldly gifts, then we value it. But we have to give it a true priority in our own list. And if our realize our priorities and give it one of the higher priorities, then we'll be able to attain the ultimate goal of our life in the shortest possible time. Now, we often think of ourselves only as the body. When I speak of myself, I speak of my body. I seldom realize that my being constitutes my physical body, my mind, and my soul. It is only a living master who gives us the realization that we have three integral parts of our being. One is the physical life, the other in the intellectual sphere, and third is the Holy Spirit or the soul. We have a body and we do whatever is possible for the development of our physical body. We have an intellect and we do all that is possible for the development of the intellect. The result is that we are going into the outer space. We have already reached the moon and trying to reach planets, but it is a pity that despite this intellectual progress, we have not been able to reach the heart of our neighbor. We do not know at night whether our brother and neighbor is wriggling in pain or is dying of starvation. You know, all our scriptures tell us that we should love our neighbor as ourselves. And it has come in the Holy Bible, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. And love thy neighbor as thyself. And on these two commandments hangs the law of all the prophets. So we are not able to attain this aim of the human life by our physical progress or by intellectual progress. We have a third integral part of our body, which is our soul. But unfortunately, we are neglecting that most important aspect of our life, and it is only a living master who brings home to us the importance of this integral part of our life. And they tell us that we should strive to be integrated men, to be holistic men, and we can be holistic men only when we progress in spiritually also. We have a physical body and we must develop physically. We have an intellect and we must develop intellectually. And we have a soul and we must develop spiritually. So if we make progress on all these three fronts, then we become integrated men, and then we are able to get the best of this world as well as the best of the next one. So the importance of a living teacher in our sphere cannot be overemphasized. Now, a living teacher always tells us that our attention is the outer form of our spirit. And now our intention is engrossed in the sensuous pleasures outside. Our normal course should have been that our soul should have been in control of our mind, and our mind should have been in control of our senses. But now we find that whatever sense requires, it drags our mind. And since our soul and mind are together, our soul is also engrossed in the sensuous pleasures. We have 9 apertures in our body, 2 eyes, 2 ears, 2 nostrils, mouth, and 2 opening blow. And that attention is going out through these 9 apertures. The saints and seers tell us that we should withdraw our attention from without. Now it is going outside, and they ask them to invert it so that it goes inward and upward, so that our attention is able to drink at the fountainhead of the water of life, which is continually going on all the time within us. We have been trying to drink at this fountainhead of the water of life outside in our life and attain immortality and eternity, but we have not succeeded so far. Man has been trying to evolve the art of alchemy with a view to attain eternal youth. And then he has resorted even to the art of embalming. But this art of embalming has also not succeeded, because originally the pharaohs and their ministers and attendants, they were mummified in the pious hope that then when they would get up after their long slumbers, they'll find that all of them were there for their service, but their bodies still continue lying into the magnificence of their mummified splendor, and they have not got out of the splendor. Again, man has been in the search of the eternal fountainhead of youth. And in that process, born the Leon, he discovered Florida in the 16th century, but man had not been able to attain that eternal youth. The real fountainhead of the water of life is within us. And when we are able to invert our attention inside, then our soul is able to drink at that fountainhead of life, and then it attains immortality, eternity, and lasting peace and bliss. You know, we were talking about the importance of a living master. So it is a basic concept in spirituality that love always emanates from the heart of the beloved. Love always emanates from our masters, and he sends us his radiation. He binds us in the silken bonds of love and brings us to the lotus feet. And then he has brought with him the untold praises of divinity from God, and he concerns himself only with their distribution with both hands. He does not look to our failings, he does not look to our weaknesses, because we have so many failings and so many weaknesses that if we were to look at them, then none of us will be deserving of the eternal gift of love and the eternal gift of the Holy Word. But he takes pity on us and he grants us initiation. And while granting us initiation, he gives us a direct link, first-hand experience of the light of God and celestial music. And whosoever has attained communion with God has attained it through these divine gifts of light of God and music of the spheres, and whosoever will attain this ultimate goal will do so by the same process. So he simultaneously teaches us the art of dying while living. Thomas Kempis has said, "Learn to die so that you may begin to live." And it has come in the Holy Bible that unless you be born anew, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. And when this question was asked by Nicodemus as to how we can re-enter the womb of the mother, Christ replies that flesh is born of the flesh and spirit of the spirit. So this reborn also means that we learn to die while living. And actually the art of learning to die while living is the art of learning to have eternal life before our physical death. In this connection, the Muslim scriptures say, "Maut qabl ata maut," die before death. And Dadu Sahib, one of the great Indian mystics, has said, "O Dadu, why not master to conquer death before our physical death occurs, because everybody leaves the physical body at the appointed time." So the master teaches us the art of dying while living, and through contact with the light of God and celestial music, he enables us to withdraw our sensory currents from our body and come above the body consciousness, to cross the inner regions of the star, the moon, and the sun. Actually, the real star, moon, and the sun are on a man's inner journey homewards. The outer stars, moon, and sun are just a reflection of the inner stars. And then, after our soul has crossed to these regions, it comes face to face with the radiant form of our Master. And the radiant form of our Master is so captivating, it is so enticing, it is so enrapturing that our soul gradually absorbs more and more into it. The Master power then takes us through the higher inner regions, and it takes us beyond the first three planes. Now, in this world, we are lost in our sensuous pleasures, and sensuous pleasures cannot give us happiness which is lasting. They only give us transitory happiness. One of my verses is, "Humko khushi mile bhi agar arzi mile, lekin jo gham mile wo ghame javeda mile." That even if we were blessed with happiness in life, it was for a transit moment, but the sorrows which fell to our lot were lasting. And the so-called entertainment of sorrow which we get from our sensuous pleasures is also not actually contained or comprised of the sensuous pleasures outside. That is the result of our attachment of our attention with those outer forms of entertainment. I'll give you one example. Supposing we are seeing a movie on the video or the TV, we seem specially engrossed. The performance looks very artistic and it is absorbing all our attention. All of a sudden we get the news that our son has met with a very serious accident. We immediately become restless and we want to run to the place of the accident to give whatever little help we can to our son. So if there was entertainment or absorption in the show, then it would continue to attract our attention. But whatever pleasure we were drawing, that was the result of our attention that we have given to the show. But as soon as we withdraw our attention, then it ceases to have any entertainment. So Master tells us that if we withdraw our attention from outside and invert it inside, then the fountain of the water of life which is within us, that gives us lasting happiness and lasting peace. So as I said, that the eternal fountain of youth is now nowhere to be found outside. This is a myth, but this myth becomes the reality when we traverse to the higher planes and reach the fountainhead of the water of life. There, our soul shakes off the shackles of our body, of our mind, and of the illusion. And then it enters into inner regions of pure consciousness. And it is only there that we realize Soham or Analhak, both of which mean that we are of the same essence in God. And thereafter, our soul first merges in our Master, which is known in mysticism as the stage of Nafil Shaykh, that it merges with our Master, and after passing to still higher region, we ultimately reach the highest and the ultimate goal of life, which is merges with God. And that stage is known to be the stage of Nafillah, a merger in God, where we achieve eternity, immortality, lasting happiness and bliss. So we have to pass to these inner stages, and this process is the process of cutting and polishing, which makes a rough stone and converts into a full-fledged diamond. So just as a rough diamond has to be cut, similarly, we have also to prune our imperfections. And for pruning our imperfection, the masters tell us the path of leading an ethical life and leading a life of devotion. The master tells us that we must have an ethical base to achieve the ultimate goal of self-knowledge and God-realization. They tell us that we should be perfect men first. Our beloved master used to tell us, it is difficult to become a man, but once we become men, then it is not so difficult to find God. If I'm a good man, I'm a good Sikh, I'm a true Christian, I'm a true Muslim. If I'm not a good man, I can neither be a true Sikh, not a true Muslim, not a true Christian. So they always tell us to make an ethical base. And this ethical base constitutes of non-violence, of truthfulness, of chastity, of purity, of humility, that is lack of ego, and selfless service. So we have to inculcate and develop these five cardinal virtues of ethics, of ethical life, in the first instance, if we want to become spiritual men. We have first to become good men, and only if we become good men, only then we can hope to become spiritual men. So the masters always teach us to have an ethical life. We should have a honeyed tongue, so that if somebody who has been injured by the world come to us, our honeyed words work as a balm on his wounds. And then we should always be prepared to serve the fellow humanity. It is said by one of the poets that man was created just to have fellow feelings, to have pain in his heart for other fellow beings. Otherwise, the angels were already there if God needed devotion alone. So the spirit of man over the angels is based on his gifts of fellow feeling and fellow service. So the master tells us that we should be full of fellow feeling, not only for the entire mankind, but for the entire creation. And then we should always be prepared to render selfless service to them. There is a basic concept in mysticism, Har ke khidmat kar do maktoom shud, that whosoever does service, selfless service to the people, he had chances of ultimately becoming a master, a God-man. Selfless service to humanity is absolutely essential for having an ethical base. And just as these days we have a base and then we get a boost, when we have got an ethical base, we get a boost from the lyrical glances of the master. And he grants us the blessings of the initiation, our contact of the holy word, our light of God and music of the spheres. And with that boost, we try to travel into the inner space. So we must first develop an ethical base if we want to attain the be-all and end-all of the human life, which is to know ourselves and to realize God. And for this, our beloved master, he devised a form of a diary, a self-introspection diary. If we go to the history of the saints and seers, we find another great man, we find that everybody has been trying to have a reintrospection at the end of day of what he had done during the day, so that the mistakes that he had committed on that day should be avoided on the next day. It is said about the great Persian mystic Hafiz that he had kept a pitcher by his side, and whenever he would go wrong, he'll put one pebble into it, and he'll start worrying after a few days that the pitcher had almost grown full of those pebbles. Similarly, we find the Saint Ignatius and then Benjamin. They were having their own form of diaries for self-introspection. But in this connection, the most scientific form of self-introspection has been devised for us by our brown master Sant Kirpal Singh Ji. In this form, on one side, he has given the godly virtues of non-violence, truthfulness, chastity, humility, which is lack of ego, selfless service, and then the time spent in meditation. And on the other side are the days. And then each one of these cardinal principles of ethics have been divided into three subcategories, and those are in thought, in word, and in deed. And he would often advise us that we should review what we have done during the day before going to bed. And then we should count the number of time we have gone on in respect of each of these items and fill up this diary. So when we fill up such a diary before going to our bed, it presents to us a mirror in which we can see how many scars we have on our face. And we have to meet our eternal beloved, our eternal spouse. In our worldly affairs, when we have a date, and when we go to meet our beloved, we see that our face has been properly cleansed, and we often go, even if necessary, to a beauty clinic before meeting our beloved. And we have to meet the eternal beloved, and we have to cleanse our face of all these blemishes. And just as we have the beauty clinic in this worldly affairs, we have the company of the saints in the mystic sphere. A saint's company, or his satsang as we call it, that is the supreme or the spiritual beauty clinic. And our living master, he is the supreme beautician. Just as we have lotions in our beauty clinics, the master also has the lotions of love, lotions of compassion, lotions of humility, with which he cleanses our dark spots in our face, and he helps us in preparing a face to be able to meet our eternal beloved. So we must have this ethical base, and the keeping of this self-introspection diary helps us in keeping up this ethical base. And this keeping of the ethical base just corresponds to the art of cutting a rough jewel. And then we find that the jewel had to be properly polished after it is cut, so as to gain the maximum amount of brilliance. Similarly, that polishing corresponds to having devotion and love on the path of spirituality. And, you know, when we have an ethical base and we have cut this jewel, then we must rub it with the cloth of devotion, with the cloth of love, so that it is able to maintain the maximum possible brilliance, and it reflects God in all His glory. Now, as I said, Love emanates from the heart of the beloved. And our love will only in response to the Master's love. And again, he ignites the fire of love in our hearts. And just as the moon is a reflection of the sun, similarly, our love for the Master and love of our God is a reflection of the Master's love for us. So, when we increase the love for our Master, then we naturally increase devotion for our Master. And if we were to convert devotion into a formula, we can say that the devotion is equal to love plus respect, because love on the spiritual path must be respectful. I remember that once our Brahman Master Sant Kirpal Singh Ji Maharaj wrote a letter to his own spiritual mentor, Hazur Baba Saman Singh Ji Maharaj, and there he said that kindly grant me the blessing of having love for you, and that love should be respectful. It is said when the great Hazur Baba Saman Singh Ji Maharaj received this letter, he kept this letter on his chest. He touched it with his eyes, he kissed it, and he replied back, "I also appreciate love which is respectful." So love should be always respectful. And love plus respect is equal to devotion. And the devotion supplies or is a substitute for polishing. And if after having an ethical base, we have a polishing of devotion, then we are able first to realize ourselves, then to attain the first stage of mysticism, which is having merger with our Master, and last to have the ultimate communion of our soul with the Creator. And then again, this devotion ends in a state of complete self-surrender to the Master. Now we are full of ego. And we are not only egoists, we are egotists in the right sense of the word. And the difference between an egoist and an egotist is that an egoist thinks too much of himself, but an egotist does not only think too much of himself, but he speaks too much of his achievements also. And this ego has to be curbed. This ego has to be pruned, and humility has to take its place. And when humility takes its place, we surrender more and more to the Master, and ultimately a stage comes when we surrender ourselves completely to the Master. And then we surrender ourselves to the Master, we no longer remain to be doers. The Master becomes the doer. So long as we remain to be doers, we always are subject to actions and reactions. We have three forms of karmas. One is known to be sanchit, or the accumulative karmas, which are the stored karmas which we cannot dissolve in our present life, and that the Master takes over at the time of initiation. The second type of karmas are known to be the pralabdha karmas, are the preordained karmas. The Master helps us in undergoing to those karmas in a much diluted way. Some of those karmas are eliminated because it has been said by Maulana Rum that a living Master has the power not only to intercept an arrow shot by God, but to return it back to God from midway also. So some of these karmas are eliminated by the grace of the living Master, and the other karmas we are helped to undergo in our life in a diluted way. And this is the way how our preordained are the pralabdha karmas, they are dissolved. And the third type of karmas are the kriyaman karmas, are the future karmas. Those are those karmas which will be the reaction of the karmas or the actions which we are undertaking now. And if we no longer remain to be doers and our masters become to be doers, then we will not be incurring any such karmas. We will be coming nekarma, as it known in the Hindu scriptures. In mysticism, they describe the same thing by saying that a stage comes in the life of a mystic when the very rib which is capable of doing any karmas, good or bad, that rib disappears. So when the master becomes the doer, naturally we do not entail any action which has a reaction, and in this manner the sanchit or the stored karmas have been taken over by our master. The pralabhut karmas or the preordained karmas have been undergone by us, and our not incurring any future karmas of by no longer remaining to be doers ourselves and making our master to be doer in our place, we have a clean boat and we gain salvation. Some of our friends often ask us, if master takes over the sanchit karmas, why doesn't he take over the pralabhut karmas also? The reply is very simple. If the master takes over our pralabhut karmas, there will be an immediate end to our physical life, because all the karmas would be taken over by him. So he does not take them over in their entirety. He takes over some of them in toto and helps us in undergoing the rest of them in a diluted way. So if we become, surrender ourselves completely to the master and he becomes the doers, then we are not able to incur any further karmas, and thereby the masters help us in attaining eternal salvation. Lord Krishna has said that both good karmas and bad karmas are like chains. One is a chain of iron and the other is a chain of gold, but they bind us. If we do good karmas, we reap better reward for them in the next life. If we do bad karmas, we are punished for them. But again, we come into the cycle of deaths and births. It is only when we cease to incur any karmas, we become ne karmas, or when our very rib, which is capable of karmas, of undertaking karmas, that vanishes, that we can attain our salvation. And that is how the master power helps us in centering ourselves in the light of the beloved. And that stage we become a mirror which reflects the light of God and light of the beloved. In this connection, I am reminded of a story which is stated by Maulana Rum, is this Masnavi. He says that once a foreign set of artists came to China and they asked the king to give them an opportunity to have their show, and the king agreed. So they were allotted one side of a big hall, and they were asked to paint very artistic murals. So they started doing the work. When the local artists, they found that this work had been allotted to the artists of another country, they also approached the king. And they requested him to allot them a place where they could show their art. And the king agreed. So they were allotted the remaining portion of that hall, but a curtain was hung between the two portions so that the artists on one side could not see of what was happening on the other side. So they were given a time limit, and as the target date was approaching, the king sent one of his own ministry to find out about the progress of the work that was going on. And that minister came back and reported that the foreign artists had done a wonderful job, They had painted huge murals with very artistic designs, lot of aesthetic sense, and very fine and delicate artwork. But he was dismayed in reporting that the artists of his own country were busy in rubbing and scrubbing and burnishing the wall, and they had not started their work yet. So when the ultimate date for the inspection came, the king first went to the portion allotted to the foreign artists, and he saw beautiful painting, beautiful mirrors. They attracted his eyes, they became the cynosure of his eyes, and he was lost in them for some time, because he was a lover of art, and they had done an excellent artistic work. But when he had inspected their portion, then the Indian, that their own countrymen, they invited to see him their work. And when there, the curtain from in between was removed, and he was surprised to find that exactly the same murals were on their side. And whereas on the original side, there are certain blemishes of color and other things, in the reflection, those blemishes had vanished. And the reflection on that side was giving a much more perfect piece of art, a masterpiece of art, than the original art itself. And he asked them how they had done it. And they told him that we rubbed and scrubbed and burnished the walls, and then we polished them. And polished them to such a great extent that they have started working as a mirror. And now they reflect the beauty of God. So we have to also polish our soul so that it reflects the beauty of God, and that polishing has to be done. And if we are able to do that polishing, then we will be able to attain our eternal goal. In this connection, I am reminded of another story from our Indian mythology. It is said that in the time of Lord Krishna, there was a great artist, and he has attained a acme of perfection in his art, that once, you know, he had somebody sit before him, in one sitting he produced a portrait, and that portrait will bear 100% resemblance to the man. So after he had won laurels in all other spheres, he came to the great Lord Krishna, and he asked him to give him an opportunity to paint his form. So that was granted to him the first day Krishna sent before him. And he drew a picture, he took it back, and he painted it overnight. The next day he brought to him. But Krishna said, "Look here, friend, it doesn't resemble my figure." And when the artist looked at it, he also blinked his eyes. He rubbed his eyes twice, thrice, four times to see, because it was the first time he was seeing that his painting had differed from Krishna's face. So he was flabbergasted, but all the same, he requested Lord Krishna to grant him another boon, another chance, and he was granted a second chance. And again, you know, he drew his outlines, went home, and completed the picture, and came that next day. But again, the same story repeated itself. He found that the form of Krishna were different from the form that he had painted on his canvas. So he got greatly discouraged. And Lord Krishna said, "Don't mind, my dear friend, I give you another chance." So he had no heart to make the third attempt. But since it was Lord Krishna's commandment, he couldn't disobey him. And he made a half-hearted attempt in drawing his form. But when he was coming back, he was met by one of the disciples, chief disciples of Lord Krishna. And he told him that what is the matter, why are so sad, so dismayed, so disappointed. And he narrated the whole story to him. And that disciple, he told him, don't fear, I'll tell you a way out. You have gone to a very difficult personality. Now, it has come in the Persian mysticism and in the Hindu mysticism and in all other mysticism that there is a Persian mystic verse, Range Nigare Mara Hardma Zigar Rangast or Bazere Har Khame Zulfus Sazar Nerangast, that the form of my beloved bears a new hue every moment, and he has 1,000 wonders concealed under his tresses. Now, the form of the master changes. They change very often. And actually, the artists were not wrong, but the form of Krishna was changing every day. So he got into this trouble. And that disciple of Krishna, he gave that artist a cue. And on the third day, when he went to Lord Krishna, he placed something before him. And when he opened that, he had, of course, he had covered it in a very nice cloth. It was very beautifully packed. But then that was unpacked. He placed before him a mirror. And what Lord Krishna saw in the mirror was his own shape, his own form. So he couldn't be tricked into changing the form of Lord Krishna, because Lord Krishna would change his form every day and the poor artist were to blame for it. So we have also to make our heart a mirror in which the form of God is reflected in his fullness, and that is how we can attain our ultimate goal. So the polishing of the process of polishing and cutting is not an easy one. And it requires a lot of effort and perseverance. But once it is complete, then we have a priceless jewel, a jewel which reflects the glory of God and all his radiance. Similarly, if we are able to purify our souls completely, to shake off the shackles of our mind, matter and illusion, to take it into the higher spiritual regions, to merge in our master first, and ultimately to merge in God and become one with him, then the reflection of God appears in our heart, in all his beauty, in all his glory, in all his splendor. And then we are able to reflect the light, the life, and the beauty of God in our heart. And then it is not that alone. Once we have achieved this end, then we start seeing the light of God in every man, in every bird, in every animal, in every creature, in every form of vegetation. We start seeing his glory in every petal, in every bud, in every flower, in every atom. And that is the stage when we start believing in the fatherhood of God, and in the brotherhood of man, nay, in the brotherhood of the entire creation, in the real sense of the word. Now we believe in this principle of fatherhood of God and brotherhood of man, only from an intellectual level, and it is only when we start seeing the reflection of God, the image of God, the glory of God, the light of God in every creature, that we attain the ultimate goal of our life. I would end up this talk by reciting a couple of my verses on love, because God is love. Our soul being of the same essence as God is love. And we inculcate love for the entire mankind, for all animals, from all birds, from all reptiles and all forms of vegetation. Only when we start seeing the image of God in the entire creation. The first of the verses is, Mahabbat ibtidao intaha hai hardo alam ki, ye nazra na matae la makane leke aaya. That love with the beginning and end of both the worlds. I brought with me this eternal gift to be distributed to one and all. And again, maine seekha hai zamane se mohabbat karna. Tera paigham mein mohabbat mere kaam aaya hai. I have learned to love entire mankind. And this eternal gift of the Holy Word I have got from your lotus feet. Gale lagalo har insaan ko ke apna hai, aur chalo to raah guzaron mein baantte hue pyar. Embrace every man because he is your own kith and kin. And when you walk the streets, go on distributing in a love in every direction. And here is a quatrain, that amn ki baat chale, pyar ka paigham chale, baat jab chalhi padi, subho chale, sham chale, cha gai vakt ke mekhane pe saman ki kata, sa kiya jam chale, jam chale, jam chale. That let us talk of love, let us talk of peace. And once we have started talking of love and peace, let us go on talking and acting on these principles day in and day out. The dark clouds of the blessed name of Savan have enveloped the tavern of the times. O cup bearer, let the cup be in circulation, let the cup be in circulation, let the cup be in circulation. Thank you.